What's going on, man? It's your boy, Jay Holly, and we are back with another episode of Unfiltered with Jesse Holly, episode 66, cranking these things out, man. Thank you. You're far too kind. You could have been anywhere in the world, but I am so glad that you are here with me. I am Jesse Holly, the sports talk equivalent of Braille. People feel me when I speak. You guys know what you got to do, man. Hit that like, hit that subscribe button, man. We are outside. Spotify, Instagram, Apple, you name it, man. Instagram, where we at? Twitter, Facebook, likes the view page, everything. Fanatics views, go out there and find everything Unfiltered with Jesse Holly related, man. Get yourself in line. Get yourself tuned in to what we have going on. And tell somebody, though. Just don't keep it to yourself. Let this thing be known across the known. If you're watching this, this is episode 66. If you don't know about this, find the 65 other ones. Find three more that you like. Give it about 15 minutes apiece. If you don't like after that three episodes, find three more. That's just what it is. But, you know, I get it. I'm not for it. Everybody, but you guys know how I like to get down. I like to give my motivation at the beginning because most of you won't be here at the end, and that's cool too because I'm not for everybody. But here's what we got for the day. This is kind of a funny thing, but it's kind of a thing. I saw it the other day. This motivation today comes from my boo thang, my gangster boo, my ghetto boo, Gorilla. Big Glow said the other day, she said, at the end of the day will end. And you probably wondering like I'm wondering, what the hell was Glow talking about? I don't really know. You make of it what you wish. No, I'm saying. But here's what I have today. I was driving over here today, and at times when I'm kind of going through things in life, for those that don't know my story, my grandmother raised me. And she passed away when I was a sophomore in college. But in the times where sometimes I'm feeling a little bit off and I kind of just need some direction, I'll just openly, I'll drive, I'll go for a walk, I'll work out, I'll sit in a sauna, and I'll just talk. And I'll just talk as if my grandmother is sitting across from me like you are. And every single time, it never fails. It never fails me. She sends me an answer. She sends me a sign. She sends me something to let me know, one, she heard me, two, she's listening, and three, that she's never stopped watching over me. And as I'm driving over here today, I'm down here at Center Sneaker Store in Mockingbird Station. I'm driving through the great city of Highland Park, beautiful homes, and I'm driving, and I'm talking, and I'm driving, and I'm talking, and maybe some tears, there may be some thug tears, there may not be some thug tears, but that's for me inside the car. But I'm driving and I'm talking, and I get to a red light and something says, look to your right. And I get to this red light and I look to my right. And randomly, out of nowhere, in the beautiful city of Highland Park, right here by close by SMU, there's a lawn sign. And the lawn sign simply says, don't give up. Now, I've driven through Highland Park many times. You see election signs. You see graduate of Highland Park. You see, you know, SMU memorabilia. You see, I mean, 100 different things on the sign. I've never seen a sign like that before in my life. Not in Highland Park. But that light turned red, and I looked to the right after just having this in-depth emotional conversation with my grandmother to get me through what I'm going through, and it said, don't give up. And I don't know who needs to hear it. I don't know who needs to know. I don't know whose grandmother is watching over them, or who mom, or dad, or aunt, or whoever it may be. But that sign told me everything I need to know. And today, tomorrow, next week, next month, next year, don't give up. It's going to be tough days, for sure. It may be even tough seasons, but boy, I took a picture of that sign, And I'm thinking about making it my screensaver because we've heard the Jim Valvano, you know, don't give up, don't ever give up. But it's something different when you're going through something and you're looking for a sign. When you're looking for something that's going to be able to give you the encouragement that you need to keep going. And that sign did it for me. So some of you won't drive through Highland Park, and some of you won't stop at that red light, and some of you won't be able to look to the right and to see that lawn sign. But I did. And so this is me delivering it to you. From my grandmother to you all. Don't give up. All right? All right, man, let's get into this show. We got a lot here. We got a lot that we're going to jam-pack into this thing, man. We're going to try to do our very best to get this thing rocking and rolling. You know, we'll start with the NFL. NFL are proposing some new rule changes. The NFL is always trying to tinker with the game, and they're proposing some new rule changes. Some that I may agree with, some that I will probably not. And the first one is the hip drop rule. The hip drop tackle. If you notice, if you're a Cowboys fan, this was the tackle that broke Tony Pollard's fibula and such. Two seasons ago, he's coming back from it this past year. So they're looking to go in there and to change this rule. This is where the defender kind of wraps the runner from behind and then kind of sits down on the waist. It's like from the hips and it's bringing them down. And it's almost like it's, remember the Roy Williams horse collar tackle where he pulled you from the back of your pads? Think horse collar tackle, but around the waist. And I get why the NFL are looking to change this rule or propose a change to this rule because of the injuries. You see a lot of people either break, you know, leg or ankle gets severely injured or what have you. But this is a tough one. And this is coming from a guy who's an offensive player. And I don't like the direction the league is going with rules like this. This is one of those rules that, again, gives the offensive player the advantage. It's already hard enough to tackle receivers and tight ends and running backs. It's becoming damn near impossible. You can't hit him high. You can't hit him when he's defenseless. The days of the no-fly zone across the middle, like, receivers don't fear going across the middle anymore. They just don't. When I came into the National Football League eons ago, there was a healthy fear. My coach used to say, shout out to Coach Sherm, my coach used to say, you better be for sure if that's a man or a zone before you go running in there. Because you go running in there and it's a zone, and that safety or that linebacker or that backside corner sitting there, we call that leave your keys. Leave your keys, because the ambulance is taking you to the hospital. We're going to need you to leave your keys so we can drive your car there, so we can move your car from the stadium. That's called leave your keys. But the league has changed. It's become an offensive league, and I get it. Offense sells, and you want high-scoring games, and you want points on the board. You want viewership. You want the highlights. But the league is making it impossible to tackle. So now I can't grab him from the hips from behind. I can't hit him up high. I can't hit him above the shoulders and can't hit him in the head. Like, you almost have to be perfect in tackling a runner slash receiver in the National Football League. And that becomes difficult. And then if you're wrong, you cost your team because it's an automatic first down. And this, if this new hip tackle is passed, they need 24 of the 32 owners to vote on it. And if they get 24 of the votes, it passes. But you cost your team 15 yards. It's an automatic first down. And now we've put more judgment calls in the hands of the officials. Because now an official has to be able to make the judgment call of, is this a hip tackle or not? A hip drop tackle or not? And when you're in tight games and you're trying to stop a guy from going forward for an extra yard or two, because that may mean the difference of, you know, fourth down and getting off the field, fourth down, turnover on downs, whatever it may have you, you're not thinking in your head, oh, I got to come across the bow and do this and do that. No, you're thinking, get this mofo down at all costs. When Derrick Henry's running the football, it's get this big bleepity bleep bleep down at all costs. When you're in the open field and you got to tackle Tyreek Hill, you don't have time to determine or not whether I'm doing the right form of tackling, because most of the time, Tyreek Hill, you're looking at his brake lights. You very few chances you get a chance to tackle Tyreek Hill in the front. And there's other backs in this league where guys now have to come down. And this game is, I can't even explain to you how fast this game moves. And we're talking about guys who are 6 foot, 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", 220, 30, 40, 50, 60 pounds. And these guys are flying around. And you want me to, at this point in time, figure out now, well, I know I can't hit him high. I can't hit him at the shoulder length. How do I bring him down? How do I bring this guy down? And if I'm wrong, in addition to the penalty that cost my entire team, when I get a personal foul like that, you attack my checkbook. Now it's a $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 fine. And if I'm a repeat offender, the fine just keeps going up. So if I'm a DB and a receiver, CeeDee Lamb catches a slant, and I'm behind him, I can't grab him around the waist now and bring him down. 15-yard penalty, $10,000 fine. I got to do that for 16, 17 games? You might as well write a check for $100,000 and just send it to the league and go, here. Let me hip tackle. Let me hip drop. And it's not every play. It's not every play. So it's going to be a difficult, difficult thing to officiate. But boy, I feel sorry for you guys on defense. This is coming from a lifelong offensive player. I feel bad for you guys on defense. It's going to be tough for you to defend any parts of the field. Can't touch the quarterback. Can't touch the receivers. Pass 5 yards. Can't touch them up across the middle of the field. And now you can't hip drop tackle. Good luck with trying to do anything successful as a defender in the National Football League. Also, the National Football League is looking to do the new kickoff proposal. The NFL... They've been peeking through the window of the XFL, and they're looking to propose a new kickoff rule. And I'm for this. As a guy who kind of cut his teeth in the National Football League with being a special teams guy, a core special teams guy, because this is the last ditch effort for the NFL to keep the kickoff return alive. If this doesn't work for the NFL, because they changed it. When I came in the league, and I know that I'm a dinosaur. When I came in the league, you could have four offensive linemen holding hands, and they had to form a wall or a wedge. And I had to run down there and pick a gap and act like a linebacker and torpedo myself into the gap. Well, that causes concussions and head injuries. Then they made you do 2x2. You're going to have two offensive linemen. You can have two defenders, two blockers, but they had to be 2 yards in front by 2 yards apart so that there wasn't this great collision. And then they move the kickoff up. So now you barely even get a kickoff return because all the kickers now have, you know, these big legs and they're kicking the ball off the back of the end zone. But the kickoff used to be such a dynamic play When you think about guys like Devin Hester and you think about guys like Washington from the New York Jets and the Seattle Seahawks at times, and you think about guys throughout the, you know, Kasim Osgood and guys like that who made their way on being a returner, that's how you kept a job at times. You were the fifth receiver, but you were a return guy. You were the third running back, but you were a return guy. You were a backup safety. You were a backup corner, but I was a return guy. And so if the league gets to a point where they are eliminating the kickoff and kickoff return, and now you just get the ball to 25-yard line, boy, you've eliminated some jobs, and you've taken away some of the fabric of the game. The game that we know, the game that we love. That portion of the game was still an exciting factor because you can have a guy like Nyheim Hines a year ago after you had the Damar Hamlin situation, and then the Buffalo Bills played again and he had three touchdowns in a game. Two of them he had on return, one was on a punt. That's the fabric of the game that we love. It's the hidden yardage that you don't talk about between offense and defense. It's the game-changing approach. So if you're eliminating kickoff, then, you know, I don't know. But here is what they're looking to do. I pulled this up because I wanted to make sure I got it right. And there's kind of a three-tier type situation. You have where you'll normally kick the ball off. And the 10 players, they cannot move until the ball hits the ground or player in the landing zone or the end zone. So then you'll have the kickoff line where the kickers will come, and then you'll have the setup zone, and then you'll have the landing zone. And they'll have players in each one of those zones, and when the ball is caught now, because they want to reduce the impact. They want to reduce the 40-yard sprint collision. That's the part that they're trying to eliminate because that's the part that causes the concussion and the brain damage. That's the part that probably got me a little cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, but it is what it is. So they're trying to do that. And this is what, if you watch the XFL for any point in time, you see this is the way that they're doing it. And I don't know, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't work. The players will adjust. The athletes are great, so they'll be fine in adjusting to it. But this is it. I'm telling y'all, this is it. This is the last-ditch effort for the NFL to try to keep the kickoff. The next move, they're done. You'll just get the ball to 25-yard line. This is the last-ditch effort of them trying to do something to keep and have the kickoff and kickoff return survive. After that, it's just going to be one of those deals where they go, hey guys, get the ball 25-yard line, and we'll just play ball. We'll play ball, and you'll see guys lose jobs. Guys who had that edge of being a core special teams guy, a guy like Matthew Slater for the New England Patriots, who played in the league for darn near 15, 16 years and was a core special teams guy on kickoff and kickoff return. Guys like him go away. He doesn't get a chance to have his life changed with being a core special teams guy. What was a 15, 16 year career may be a 3-4 year career because the likeliness of him being having an important role in the team is diminished. It's gone. It's bye. See ya. It's vanished. If the NFL gets rid of kickoff. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. They vote on it next week in the owners' meetings. So keep an eye out for that because that can have a significant change in what the NFL looks like going forward. That for your favorite players and for your favorite teams. Cowboy related. This is something that we talked about this before the show and it changed. Because I was going to talk about the Tyron Smith comments, and we still will. But this was a conversation that we were having before the show, and I think it's a very important conversation. I've said on many different occasions, on many different platforms, that I'm not a Cowboy fan. I'm a Cowboy, and that's a difference. But there are many, many, many Cowboy fans out there. Many of you watch my program and my show, and I appreciate you. Thank you so much, as well as the other places that I go. But I think we have to start having this conversation aloud, not at the barbershops only, not in our small circles, but publicly. And I think, I do believe this. I think the Cowboys are in their arrogant era. You know how like the WWE had the Attitude Era and what that was all about and how that ushered in many of the guys who we call legends, and it was the Attitude Era. I think the Cowboys are in their arrogance era. And maybe they've been in it. Maybe we're just finally willing to look ourselves in the mirror and finally call it what it is. But I think the Cowboys still believe that they're the belle of the ball. And this past free agency has maybe jaded many of you in the sense of the Cowboys feel as if they still a bad B. There was a time. Remember when Trina would say, I'm the baddest, right? There was a time when Trina was the baddest B. She was. Now, she can still say that if she wants now, but it ain't true. She can still proclaim that statement. I'm still the baddest B. And while I have no smoke for Trina or anybody from the Slip and Slide crew, Trina ain't the baddest B no more. So she can say it, but that don't make it true. And I think the Cowboys still believe that they're the baddest B. I think they believe that they are option number one. You ever going into a club and you know those girls in the club that know that they the baddest in the club and that they gonna get chose because that's who they are? And then there's those other ones that they look around and they're like, oh, I think I should be chose, but you never get chose. The Cowboys are coming into that era. They're not coming to that. They're in that era. And while I say they're in their arrogance era, it's because when you look at and you hear things, like when you hear, now, this is coming from someone, I didn't want Derrick Henry. That's just me personally, Jesse Holly. I wasn't a fan of Derrick Henry coming to Dallas as the running back or the missing piece or whatever it is that people may have thought. And I'm not disagreeing with anyone who thought otherwise. That's fine. That's your opinion. We can all have our opinions. I wasn't a fan of it. But then you hear Derrick Henry come out and say, yeah, they didn't even call me. I ain't even hear from him. And I got to thinking. I was like, well, dang. And I think the way that the Cowboys are approaching life, not just free agency, but just all around, there should be a level of due diligence that is done. There should be no, like, you got embarrassed, and you've been getting embarrassed for the last couple of playoffs. Two of the three, which had happened at home. So not only are you getting embarrassed, you getting embarrassed in front of company. At the crib. And for you to not go out and do the extreme due diligence of at least calling any and every possible person that could make a difference in your football team, is delusionally arrogant. And not that you have to sign everybody, because that's unrealistic. That's another level of delusion. But there should be no stone left unturned. There should be nothing or no one that at least you picked up the phone and said, hey, big head, how you doing? You want to eat? You hungry? And if Big Head say no, you go on to the next one. But you need to find out if she hungry. You need her to tell you no. Right? The great Wayne Gretzky and the great Michael Scott and the great Michael Jordan, they all said the same quote, right? Like, I like what Michael Scott goes, you know, he crosses Wayne Gretzky's name out and he puts his name up there, Michael Scott, and he goes, you miss every shot you don't take. You miss 100% of the shots that you do not take. And for a team that has not had any real serious playoff success and going on 30 years, you can't be arrogant enough to go, I'm not calling folks. Who the hell are you? And then you hear a guy like Tyron Smith, and I love this because here's what sometimes Cowboy fans do. Cowboy fans do this, is that when a person leaves the team and they have something that they deem, the fans deem negative towards the team, they call that player bitter. They call that player a hater. They call that player every other name in the book. And we've seen it on multiple accounts. And Tyron Smith, who just signed with the New York Jets after 13 seasons with the Dallas Cowboys, came out and he said, you know, this is the first time I've ever been in free agency. And I'm paraphrasing here, so don't, I'm not going word for word, but this is my first time in free agency. It was a little bit weird. It was stressful. It only lasted a week, but it felt like forever. And he said it really came down to the Cowboys and the Jets. And then he said, well, if you look and you see how the Cowboys are going, yeah, I'm going to the Jets. Now, say what you want about Tyron. Say what you want about me. I can be bitter. I can be a hater. I can be whatever it is you need me to be. That's from Tyron. And you can decipher that however you want to decipher it. But there was something in that that he said, I looked at the current state of where it was, and I thought to myself, going to New York, who's had less success than the Cowboys, we're in a better position to get him to a place that he's never been to, and that's a Super Bowl. With a 40-year-old quarterback who's coming off an Achilles injury, who might be running for vice. No, I'm playing. He's not going to be vice president. He's not going to be the running mate to Robert Kennedy Jr. That's a lot. That's a lot. And you see more so now, teams aren't picking. Now, you can look at the Shaq Leonard situation last year. Feel how you feel. Say what you say. A lot of y'all, though, if you're being honest, you wanted Shaq Leonard in Dallas. Now, he went to Philadelphia and he spit the bit. Fine. That's fine. Cool, great. Y'all wanted them. Not everybody. A large portion of y'all wanted Shaq Leonard here. And he thought that that was a better situation. He thought that that team, and they bombed and they folded and all that kind of stuff. But he thought that that team was better. I look at a guy like Aaron Jones who chose Minnesota. Minnesota don't even have a quarterback. They don't even have a quarterback. Aaron Jones, who I know for a fact is a lifelong Cowboys fan. And I get money sometimes plays a major part. But he went to a place that didn't have a quarterback. Instead of coming to a place who had a quarterback and no running backs. Let that sink in for a second. He stayed within the division and went to a place that had no quarterback. And even the quarterback that they had was mid and average, above average at best. And maybe had some semblance of a running game. Instead of coming to a place where the quarterback is above average, and the starting running back that they did have, they shipped him out. He's in. Well, they didn't ship him out, but He was in Tennessee. And you're from here. You're from the great state of Texas. Aaron Jones is from Texas. Family are lifelong Cowboy fans. And he said, nah, I'm going to Minnesota. Like, we have to start picking up on the signs that are being laid out there. That's a major thing. And the Cowboys have to figure out a way to go from being arrogant, just a tad bit more humble. And you got to be picking up the phone. There has to be work that has to be done. Y'all, there's too much laying back, laying low, and thinking things are just going to come to you, putting an immense amount of pressure on your scouting department and Will McClay to hit 100% on your draft. You're asking those guys to damn near do the impossible. It's to take something that's already a 50-50 crapshoot, and I don't care what round you're in. First rounders are 50-50 crapshoots. And you're saying, I need all of these guys to be impactful today. Because we aren't picking up the phone, doing the due diligence. And that's Dallas, that's the front office, that's Mike McCarthy, that's whoever is involved, whoever sits at the big long table, the decision-making table, that becomes a little bit of a malpractice on your team. For you not even to call. I don't care that he didn't come. I don't care that he didn't come here. But for guys, for you to start not even making a phone call just to see, that tells me that you might be still hanging on and living a little bit too much on what used to be. Can't change who you were. You will always be 3-time Super Bowl champions in the 90s, 5-time overall. But you're far from that right now. And unless you're able to turn that around ASAP, the league is passing you by. So the Cowboys got to get out of that arrogance era. You're not the belle of the ball. You can sit back and tell us all day long, like Trina, that you the baddest. But you ain't. We appreciate what you were. Like we appreciate what Trina was. But you ain't that no more. There's a new cast of baddies that are walking around here. In Buffalo, in Kansas City, in Miami, Houston. Run in your own backyard. They about to become baddies. They just got into their soft girl era. They getting cute. They found out that they like me. All right, man. Moving along, and I want to preface this next topic respectfully, talk about Marvin Harrison Jr. Respectfully, I want no smoke. So I will watch my mouth as I tread lightly talking about Junior, Senior. I want no smoke. So I say all of this respectfully. But Marvin Harrison Jr., Maserati Marv, as Gus Johnson calls him, he has decided, not only will he not do anything except the medicals at the combine, we know that, but most people who have something going on say, you know what, not doing the combine, going to wait till I get to my pro day, where everything is in my favor, my campus, my everything, more comfortable, I kind of control a little bit more. Maserati Marv and company says, we ain't doing nothing. We ain't running for you. We ain't lifting for you. We ain't three-coning for you. We ain't broad jumping for you. You ain't seeing me run a route. and I ain't catching a football. And I am not sitting in your little meeting rooms either. And you ain't putting me on the board to draw up your little plays. Maserati Marv and family has said, we ain't doing none of that. Marvin Harrison Jr. right now is still projected to be a top 10 pick. Now, here's where we're going to have to there's going to be some line drawn. Even when Tay and I was even talking about it, there was some line that was being drawn in the process of it all. And reports had came out that Marvin Harrison Sr., and I say this respectfully, these are his words, but I do say this and report this respectfully to the Harrison family. I want no smoke. But Big Marv said that we are treating this as if Marvin is already a pro. So they've been training, and he's on the schedule as if he's getting ready for OTAs. They're using the rest time instead of doing all the combine stuff and the senior day stuff. Oh, not the senior day, but the pro day stuff and all that kind of stuff. They're just continuing in the beat of their own drum. And they're getting Marvin Jr. ready for OTAs. Now, I think Marvin will still be a top five pick, probably head somewhere like to Arizona. But this does raise the question. Talent versus tolerance. Does Marvin Harrison Jr. not doing anything at the pro day, at the combine, not talking to anybody, dipped out on the media? There is nothing that you've seen Marvin Harrison do except what you've seen him do on film at the Ohio State University. Is this a red flag for you? If you're picking in one of these premium picks and you're saying, boy, could we use a 6'3", 6'4" receiver who runs a 4? I don't even know what the hell he runs. He ain't run nothing, so I don't even know what he runs. He runs fast. He runs away from people, so I'm going to assume he's somewhere around the 4'4". I'm going to go with 4'4". No one knows what he runs. No one's clocked him. But he's fast. Does this give you red flag symptoms for a guy who has said, no, y'all already seen me do my work. I've done it for the last 3 years at Ohio State. Y'all seen me? Y'all turn on the film. A lot of times you have GMs and owners and other people in the scouting department, they come to the combine and they they've done their due diligence. They've watched the film. They've been to the games. They've been to the practices on campus, but they come to learn a player. They come to learn the person. Because I do believe that there are personality fits. Because you may like a player athletically, but if you know your locker room and your culture and the people that this person will be fit, because if you're drafting in the top 10 picks, I mean, if you're drafting in the top 10 picks, then you really want this player to be a significant part of the team. But if there is a personality disconnect on what your culture is and what this player is, then maybe that might not be the pick for you. Now, I'm one of the guys who give me the talent. Give me the talent, and I'm going to try to put some veterans around him, and I hope I have a culture in the locker room that's going to be able to harness that talent and give it the maturity that it needs. Some are more so like, give me the intangibles. Because some look at what's happening, and again, to the Harrison family, I say this respectfully. Some look at the situation and go, this is a red flag. This is a guy who has diva tendencies. This is a guy now who doesn't want to do anything, and it moves him down on my draft board. I don't feel like this is a guy who I can depend upon. Not a good teammate. Unwilling to sacrifice for the betterment of the team. Or whatever else that you may see that comes from this. Or you can say, hey, his daddy's been around the block a long time. He knows a lot of people. GMs have probably spoken to Pops or Peyton Manning or whoever else, Brian Day at Ohio State and receiver coaches and whoever, all these different things. But I do think going forward, you're going to see more things happen like this I'm not saying it's going to be a herd of people, but I think more and more guys who have kind of solidified themselves at the top 10 pick, and I might have said this before in this thing, because of the way that the pay is scaled now, I know what I'm going to get if I'm the fifth overall pick. I know what I'm going to get if I'm the seventh overall pick. The days of I can negotiate all the different kind of numbers are dead. That left after Sam Bradford. That rule has changed. Everything now is slotted. So just look at what the guy got last year at the number four overall pick. You're going to, that kind of look just like that. The money will be a little bit different because the salary cap goes up and the money goes up every single year. But it's going to look very similar to that. The years, the fifth-year option, what that number looks like, all the different things that come along with that. You may be able to change some little bit of the verbiage in it because of the position that you play. But for the most part, 80, 90% of that contract will look the exact same. But I do think we're going to see more people have Marvin Harrison Jr., respectfully, type tendencies coming towards the pro day, the scouting combine going forward. Now, maybe not get rid of everything, but maybe just like, you know what? I got a lot of film out there. I'm not doing all this running around. I'm getting ready for the league. But we'll see. The biggest story right now in all of sports, and it's not even close. The biggest story right now is not the NCAA tournament. Believe it or not. It's not the NFL. It's not the NCAA. It's not the NBA. It's Major League Baseball. Go figure. Rob Manfred, this is what you wanted. You wanted the attention on the MLB as we get ready to open up the gates. The grass is being cut right now in stadiums all across the country. Beers have been delivered. They've been put on chill. Popcorn is being popped. Hot dogs are being cooked up. Take Me Out to the Ball Game is being practiced right now on so many different platforms and people setting up who's going to sing what and when. But the biggest story in baseball right now, it's not about opening day. The biggest story right now is Shohei Ohtani and gambling. If you have not been living under a rock, Shohei Ohtani, the biggest, and I don't even say this, this is not even an exaggeration. Shohei might be the biggest international athlete out right now. When you think about it, internationally, it might be Shohei. Signed one of the largest contracts in MLB history. But another black mark for MLB. Shohei and his interpreter are wrapped into this swaddle of the gambling scandal. So here's the backstory. Shohei's interpreter had just been fired from the Dodgers. Why? Because there was $4.5 million that was transferred from Shohei Ohtani's account to a bookie to pay off a gambling debt. Now, Shohei got a lot of money. This is Shohei's boy. And he did an interview and he talked about it and all this other kind of crazy stuff. And then now you're starting to see stories get a little bit, now that it's come out, the Dodgers are like, no. Shohei didn't send that money. It was stolen by his friend and interpreter. Now, the MLB has now set out to do their own internal investigation on what really happened. One thing for certain, two things for sure. Somebody gambling. That's fact. And not only is somebody gambling, somebody got a problem. Because I don't know how long or how much, but for you to rack up a $4.5 million gambling debt, you must have been putting out some parlays like a mofo. You must have been putting out parlays like, you must have been eat, sleeping, and crapping parlays. 10-leg parlay, 15-leg parlay, and you must have been putting these parlays out there. $4.5 million. I don't give a damn how much money you got. $4.5 million on the gambling debt is a lot of money. And if Shohei ain't doing it, I need $4.5 million friends too. But this is the thing about it all. And here's what I love about the politics of sport. And here comes the inner working of talent versus tolerance. You see, they banned Pete Rose from the league. But see, when Pete Rose got caught betting on baseball, he wasn't Pete Rose, Pete Rose. He was a manager. He was a manager. That's an expendable piece. Yeah. Yeah, he's a legend of the game, but his contribution to the game is over. He ain't hitting and stealing bases and throwing strikes anymore. So we can do away with him because we have to make a firm, strong stance that gambling on baseball is not permitted. Oh, but this is Shohei. This is the big money maker. This is the belle of the ball. This is Trina is a bad B in her prime. And what a black stain. Ah, stanky stain too. It would be on baseball. That if your because baseball already has a problem marketing itself. And now you finally got one of your guys, the guy who is MVP. This is the guy. On the mound, in the box, however you want it. The biggest name you have in baseball. Bigger than Trout, bigger than Mookie, bigger than Juan Soto, bigger than Judge. Name them. Name one. Not bigger than Shohei. If the biggest star of your game playing for one of the blue blood teams in baseball, the Dodgers, in a major market, is bang for gambling? It'll never happen. Oh, Shohei, interpreter buddy? I can't pronounce his name. Forgive me. You toast, my boy. You are going so down. I don't know what the laws is back in Japan.
It was in California.
But I know, but sometimes they extradite them dogs back to.
It's actually illegal in California,
too. Not if you bet no baseball, that ain't illegal.
No, sports gambling is illegal.
Right, you're right. But I'm saying, in Japan, they play by different rules. See, they sent you over here to be with Shohei and probably was like, hey, but you embarrassed us? Man, I ain't gonna tell you what they're gonna do to your family. But I can tell you one thing for sure. In these here states, ain't no way they let Shohei go down with this one. Rob Manfred would never be able to come back from this one. The way they get ready to doctor this thing up, you gonna think old interpreter boy is, you gonna think he was at the White House on January 6th. You gonna think he had something to do with 9/11. You gonna think they about to doctor this thing up where he gonna look so bad, he taking a fall for everything. Now, I don't know what they're gonna do in Japan, because you might get 2 million lashes with a bamboo stick, wet bamboo branch. I don't know what, they may do you old school, tie four horses to your limbs and smack them on the butt and rip you apart because you embarrassed them. And the biggest name in baseball, both in America and in Japan, is now under the microscope of gambling because, maybe because of you, maybe Shohei got, maybe his name might be Shohei Parlay. Parlay Shohei. He down at the Kumite betting on blood sport. I don't know. But this is a bad look on baseball. You wanted the attention. You don't want this attention. And Rob Manfred, you keep... We've had this argument before about who was the worst commissioner of all time. Rob, ain't looking good for you, playboy. This is another situation where baseball just can't get it right at times. It just seems like they just like, you know what, we were ushering this thing, and it looked like this season was getting ready to come off to a great start, and then you get smacked with this. But they're doing their internal investigation. But also let me tell you this also. For anybody sports-wise, we keep seeing this thing come about. Y'all better stop playing with Vegas. Y'all better stop. Because what y'all fail to realize is Vegas telling on y'all. Vegas understands the partnership between baseball, basketball, NFL, NHL. So when they start seeing y'all doing some stuff, that little $4.5 million, that's not worth the relationship with baseball. So they telling on y'all. That's how you know these jokers been doing all this gambling, all that kind of stuff. Vegas got facial recognition that when you walk into the casino, they can see your face and be alerted that you ain't supposed to be in here. Or you a card shark, or you a card reader, or you a dice. Y'all better stop playing with Vegas. It's too much money. And as long as they have the relationship with these teams and these leagues, you small fry, Shohei, I don't give a damn how much money you got. That 4.5 that he paid out, whether it was him or whoever, to the bookie, whatever, that ain't worth the relationship with the MLB. And if you're doing some shady things with one casino, they're going to blow the whistle because they don't want to lose. And while they may have hit you for 4.5 this time, if they see you doing things that ain't supposed to be, it may cost them big time over here. So NFL players, NBA players, NHL, y'all better stay out of Vegas' way because they the ones telling on y'all. That's how these leagues is finding out. Y'all better stop playing with Vegas, man. Y'all better leave Vegas alone. Because they wearing y'all out, man. They wearing y'all out. All right, man. NCAA tournament is going on. I love NCAA. Go Tar Heels. Y'all already know where I'm at. I'm there. I'm here all day long. My Tar Heels, we won the other night. We got Michigan State. But the NCAA tournament, this ain't a men's league right now. It's about the ladies. And I'm happy for the ladies. I was looking up some numbers today. And on Fox alone, the NCAA on Fox saw a 48% increase in viewership. A 60% surge in viewership all across major networks. People are tuning in to see the Caitlin Clarks, the Angel Reese's of the world, the Juju at USC, the entire South Carolina team, the Paige Beckers at UConn, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on because there are so many good players all across the country. And you think I'm lying, ticket prices said the same as well. Right now, the get-in for some of these games, for men's games, $192. That's the get-in. Women's, $390. The final four ticket prices, I say that back. That the 192 and the 390, that's for the Albany. That's for the Albany in New York. That has like USC is in there, Iowa's in there, another couple of teams in there. But to get in to watch some of those games, it's 390. Just to get in. 390. The Final Four tickets. The Final Four tickets. Right now, the Final Four to get in for the males are about $242 to get into the building. Now, you're probably going to be sitting there, Jesus, but you'll be in the building. For the ladies, the get in, for the women's Final Four, $775. $775. The women are here. And I love it. And I don't know how long it's going to last. Because these players, like Caitlin, like Angel, they're eventually going to have to go to the WNBA. And you're looking for an ushering. And now you got Juju. She'll be here for a while because she's a freshman. She has two more years. She has to be in women's college basketball. But I'm excited that the women's game has finally gotten the attention that it rightfully deserves. And there are more coming. There are more young ladies coming. But this is I'm happy to see this in the NCAA, that the viewership is up across major networks. The ticket prices are up because they have a brand of basketball that we want to see. They've always had a brand of basketball we want to see, but now people are finally tapped in. And some of these networks and some of these other NIL things, they're throwing money at these ladies right now because they want to keep them in college. They want to keep them in college because they're saying, we actually make more money because you're actually viewed different on the college level as far as viewership and accessibility and viewership than you are in the WNBA. Because South Carolina gets played on ESPN in primetime spots. UConn, and Tennessee, and you, those get primetime spots. You may not get that in the WNBA. If you're the Indiana Fever or you're the Connecticut Sun, y'all may not always get the primetime games. If you're the Aces, sure, they're sexy. They're good. They're athletic. They win. They have notable names. But not every team gets that. And so if you're tucked away somewhere that doesn't get the national exposure, that's pretty tough. But the other thing that I love about the NCAA is you come into the week ready to see the games, and after the first couple of hours, names that you never knew are household names. And I love the new guy, Jake, how do you say his last name? Gokli from Oakland. By the way, many of you, like me, realize this Oakland team ain't from California. Sorry to Miss Edwards, my geography teacher back at Abraham Clark High School. I apologize. But if we being honest, and maybe a lot of y'all smarter than me, I went to a public high school and a public university. But I ain't know Oakland was in Detroit, Michigan, somewhere. Suburb of Detroit. I would have bet about Oakland. Okay. I remember playing Oakland when we played Oakland the first round of 2005 when we won a national team. We played Oakland in the first round. I would have bet my bottom dollar they were from California. I would have bet my bottom dollar. So like many of you, we found out about Jake. We also found out that Oakland is not California. But I love stories like this because this is a guy who we don't watch Oakland basketball. Oakland basketball ain't on ESPN. Oakland basketball is not being talked about. Oakland basketball is not being played at no other place than in Detroit. But here is this kid, fifth year or sixth year senior. By the way, this is the last year of this COVID year. All these guys who got these fifth and sixth years, this is done. All y'all done now. Now, you ain't going to see too many more fifth year or sixth year guys. But this guy, Jake, man, they're taking on Kentucky. Another sidebar. Nobody has done less with more than John Calipari. Holy moly guacamole. I'm not one that wants to see folks lose their jobs, but you think about the talent since about 2008 or 9 when he took over at Kentucky. He talks about how much money the players make in the NBA. He got one championship, 2012, and that team had 8 NBA players on it. I think Devin Booker came off the bench. I'm for real. But Jake hit 10 three-pointers last night, 30 points. He took 3 dribbles. 3 total dribbles. That's Klay Thompson-esque. Klay Thompson scored 61 and took 11 dribbles. But this is the story where you come out and this kid was white hot last night. But I love these stories because every single year there's a team, there's a player, whether it's Florida Gulf Coast, whether it's Shaheem Holloway in St. Peter's, or whether it's, you know, Loyola Chicago and Sister Mary Clarence. I don't know if that's her real name, but you find out these people who we did not know come from these universities that we do not watch, and they get on this great stage and they have a showing of the lifetime. And Jake even said, he goes, I'll probably never play in the NBA. He goes, but I can play with those guys. And he showed you last night against Kentucky where he went and he went off for a fantastic performance. But that's what I love about the NCAA. It's one of those things where it's always, always going to be someone or some team that we did not know that we now know. All right, man, I'm getting up out of here. We got to go because I'm tired. And we'll bring up more stuff next week. I appreciate you guys, man, for always being here with me. Remember, that sign is there. You got to just look for it. Don't give up. Just keep pushing. Even if you got to shed a few thug tears on the way, just keep pushing and keep going, man. I appreciate you guys. Until next time, remember, like, subscribe, hit the button, tell a friend to tell a friend, share it with your folks at Mr. Fourth and Long on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, Fanatic Views. Look us up on there. Unfiltered with Jesse Holly on YouTube, on Spotify, on Apple. Make me a part of your walks in the morning. Make me a part of your workouts. Make me a part of your sauna. Make me a part of the treadmill. Make me a part of the car ride. Whatever it is, you making dinner, put me on. You working in the garage, put me on. You taking a trip cross country, put me on. 66 episodes when you see this one. To whatever you got to do to make it work, man. I appreciate you guys so much, man. All right, that's it for me. Remember, eliminate the contingencies. I'm out.